This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Baby, let me be your love and take me back. Put a chain around my neck and lead me anywhere. Let me be,
oh, let him be
your teddy bear. I don't want to be a tiger, cause tigers play too rough. I don't want to be a lion, cause lions ain't the kind you love enough.
Oh yeah, a little bit of teddy bear. Nothing like Elvis Presley on a Wednesday, the day before Halloween. I don't know why those two go together, but good morning. Welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am indeed Paul Molloy, and along with my partner, Big Ed Davis, thank you for joining us on this Halloween Eve, which is also 2 days before All Saints Day. So Halloween is actually All Hallows Eve, more than you wanted to know about it. We will be talking with John Glazer of the Cato Institute, just a couple of minutes. We're going to talk about our intervention in Syria. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I think you're going to find this a very interesting discussion, so stay tuned. And bombshell speculation from one of the world's most famous forensic pathologists that Jeffrey Epstein, remember him, was killed, a homicide. We'll see what the proprietor of the barber pole, Andrew Sorese, has to say about it. He is always into these kinds of subplots. I think you'll find that interesting. And is aspirin a better help for depression than Prozac and all those kinds of drugs? Well, a new report says it just might be, so we'll talk about that as well. And in our Freedom Works Ultimate Top 10, now what would you think we'd want to do the day before Halloween? We are going to give you the top 10 scariest movies of all time. I think you're going to find it kind of fun. By the way, Freedom Works, we are sponsored in part by Andrew's Master Barbershop. If you want the best haircut, you guys, in Tampa Bay, I am telling you, and I've been to so many of them over the years, it's Andrew, the Master Barber in Dunedin. It's on Overcast Drive, just north of Route 580, State Road 580. And it's in the Overcash Plaza. Great haircut at a great price. And also, please, please visit our website, ourfreedomworks.com, where you can listen to any of our shows, because Big Ed sets up all of our shows on podcast. And you will know beforehand what the interview guest will be, his topic, and most importantly, our ultimate top 10. They're all there for you. Our, which is O-U-R, ourfreedomworks.com. Well, we're going to talk a little bit later about what's going on with Jeffrey Epstein. Remember him? Well, the body of this money man and sex addict, sex offender, who was found dead back in August in his prison in Manhattan, bore telltale signs of homicide. Homicide. Despite the official report that he killed himself. Now, who is saying that? Do you remember Dr. Michael Bodden? Do you know why that guy's been around since John F. Kennedy's assassination? Dr. Michael J. Bodden, former New York City medical examiner, who has worked on high-profile cases during a five-decade career, went on Fox and Friends. Now, Biden was hired, it's kind of pronounced Michael Baden. I don't want to confuse him with the vice president. Why didn't you correct me, for goodness sake, if I'm saying Biden? I've got Biden on the brain. We're talking about Michael Baden, Ed? Michael Baden, not Biden.
Actually, it's Bodden.
Now you got me really confused.
It's Michael Bodden. I remember him from the HBO specials.
You're right. I'm probably right.
He's on both sides of the fence, too. He's extreme left, and then he'll go the other way.
Yeah, you're right.
He's all over the place. Pender's got the bigger wallet for him.
You know, he goes all the way back to the Marilyn Monroe killing, and she died in 1962. That's how long this guy has been around.
He operated on a few dinosaurs, I think, too, back in the day.
Yes, he had to determine if it was a Tyrannosaurus Rex that killed a Brontosaurus. Anyway, so he goes on Fox and Friends, and he says there are three fractures, apparently, I guess, in the neck area, excuse me, that Epstein had. Two on the left and right sides of his larynx. Specifically, he says the thyroid cartilage or Adam's apple. Anyway, he says these three fractures are extremely unusual in hangings by suicide and occur much more commonly as homicide strangulation. Now, you know, we talked about this, Ed, before. There were all these guards that conveniently weren't around when he died, right? They're supposed to be making their rounds, and then the cameras didn't work. I mean, it was very suspicious to begin with, and I think you and I talked about it. And then we talked with Andrew. We're going to talk with him again. I want to see if he thinks that Baden is onto something. So anyway, that would be interesting. Very interesting. Also, did you know that aspirin, this is totally off the subject, but I couldn't believe this, aspirin may be better for depression than things like Prozac and all that? Anti-inflammatory drugs like ibuprofen and aspirin can battle major depression effectively and could be a safer alternative than antidepressants. Wow, if that was true, can you imagine how cheap it is to get generic aspirin and feel good? That's not bad. Now, they did a test in Britain. More than one in six British adults, and this is around 7.3 million people, by the way, take antidepressants. But the drugs do not work for around 30% of these people and can bring, of course, side effects, including sleeplessness, upset stomach, weight gain, and even suicidal thoughts. Now an analysis of 30 studies involving over 1,600 people says that non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, that includes aspirin and ibuprofen, were almost 80% more effective at fighting a major depression than a placebo tablet. Now, if you also then took the antidepressant drugs, apparently they wouldn't be up to 79 or 80%. That's pretty interesting. It would save you a lot of money if it's true. I wonder what the drug companies that make Prozac and some of those other thinking when they read something like this. Wow. Current treatment for depression, largely centered around restoring mood-boosting chemicals. It's called serotonin, by the way, in your brain. And experts now think the cause of chemical depression may be an overactive immune system triggering inflammation throughout the entire body. Well, very interesting. So go to the medicine, Kevin. Find if you're feeling down or depressed, maybe take one aspirin and see if you feel any better. Who knows? All right, we're going to take our break. And when we come back, we are going to have a very interesting talk about whether or not U.S. involvement in Syria is worthwhile and the right thing to do. About a working old summer just to try to earn a
dollar. Yeah, this is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
The best barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop, located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They've got a beautiful new facility, but you'll still get the very best haircut from the very best hair cutters, and for a great price, too. Andrew's Master Barbershop is open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2 p.m. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza, State Road 580 and Overcash Drive in Dunedin.
If you would like to become a wholesale buyer of the premium quality longevity product that you hear about right here on the Tantalk Radio Network for personal service, you can pick up the phone right now and call Lola at 727-441-3311. Again, that's Lola at 727-441-3311. Or for even faster service, log on to TantalkHealth.com. That's TantalkHealth.com. Here's your health and longevity.
Hi, this is Jay Leno.
Hey, this is Ted Nugent.
Hi, everybody. This is David Hobbs.
Hi, this is Bob Marshall.
Hey, this is Danny the Count Coker.
Hey, this is comedian, author, and most importantly, vintage race car driver Adam Carolla.
Hi, this is Shirley Cha-Cha Muldowney.
I'm John Forrest.
Hey, this is Jack Roush.
And you're listening to Nostalgic Radio and Cars.
That's Nostalgic Radio and Cars with the most fascinating and legendary names in motorsports every Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
Listen to the latest pet trends with benefits on the Pet Buzz every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Join pet trendologist Charlotte Reed and veterinarian Dr. Michael Fleck as they talk all things pets. From animal health and wellness, money-saving tips, celebrity gossip, breaking news, and more. Their expert guests are in the know and in the now. To learn more about this unique program and its hosts, tune in to the show on the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
We are back on the eve of Halloween and delighted to have John Glazer. He is director of foreign policy studies at the Great Cato Institute. And we're going to talk to John about our involvement, America's involvement in Syria, whether this is a good idea, is it going to make things worse? How is it affecting people here in the United States directly? All that kind of thing. John, welcome to Freedom Works.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's our pleasure. Our pleasure. And this is so complicated. But I know that the Cato Institute has just put out a piece about America's ill-fated Syria intervention. And so I want to talk a little bit about the whole concept. Now, of course, the Cato is a libertarian think tank. Foreign involvement has never been something that Cato has espoused. The thing in Syria is very complicated. Just in general, should we get the heck out of it entirely, or what should we do on this?
So I do think that we should not be directly involved in Syria. I think the U.S. military in particular should be used to defend vital interests, most likely security interests of this country, you know, protect this territory and its people from. And I don't think that that's what they're doing in Syria. We have trickled our way into this conflict to a greater and greater extent ever since we initially started meddling in it back in about 2012. And we continue to kind of involve ourselves, and yet we lack a kind of strategic vision for what it is we're there to achieve, what objectives we can hope to meet, how it connects to U.S. interests, and what are the risks involved? We haven't really had that debate.
Right. You know, this all ties in with the Mideastern problem. We were bombed, 9/11, and then we get into Afghanistan and all of the different things that are going on in Iran and Iraq. It's all tied kind of together. And now we've captured this al-Baghdadi. And yet, all of this, and everybody's happy about that, and we got ISIS, and they, you know, we got them coming over here. I mean, it just, and the Kurds. So we got Donald Trump basically running on the idea that we shouldn't be involved in all of these different things. Is in general, has the Cato Institute backed Donald Trump's foreign policy?
Well, we have scholars, individual scholars, that and they put forward their analysis. It's we don't have sort of the Cato Institute supporting this, that, or the other.
Yeah,
thing,
but right.
We've been very critical of President Trump's foreign policy, and there's a lot to criticize. I think by and large he's kind of in over his head. He did not spend many years prepping to handle high stakes diplomacy as he was, you know, hosting a reality TV show and doing real estate deals. And I think that shows. I think the letter, for example, that he sent to President Erdogan of Turkey is sort of evidence of how ill-equipped he is to kind of deal in this space. The other problem is that he's highly contradictory. So yes, on the campaign trail, he talked about withdrawing from these ongoing wars, not doing any more nation building or regime change operations. And yet he hasn't pulled back from a single war. He's talked about withdrawing from some of the wars that America is actively engaged in, but he hasn't actually succeeded in concluding one of them. He's actually increased the number of troops in the Middle East. And with this Syria thing, for example, you know, he framed the entire episode in the language of, you know, getting out of these endless wars, and yet simultaneously authorized an additional several hundred troops to secure the oil fields, not a mission Congress ever authorized. And now it looks like maybe we're set up for another indefinite and limited U.S. military presence in Syria. So he constantly contradicts himself. He talks about ending endless wars, and then he actually doesn't do that.
We're talking with John Glazer. He is the Director of Foreign Policy Studies at the Cato Institute. And we're talking about the intervention, you might say, of the United States in this very complicated Syrian situation. John, you know that the United States started getting involved in everybody else's business around the world pretty much after the end of World War II, because we were dividing up Europe, right? And other parts of the world. We had reduced Japan and Germany's, to basically, you know, we take away all their guns. And so now, you know, we had to kind of come in and start babysitting a lot of these countries. And that's kind of where our involvement really got started, right? And even in the Mideast, isn't that kind of where it all begins? So at what point should we have, you know, what point should we have woken up and said, you know what? We got to leave these things alone now. You know, these countries can take care of themselves, and we shouldn't be, you know, and of course, this might include Korea and some of these other places. I mean, where do you draw the line?
No, it's a very good question. And I think part of the reason we haven't done that reevaluation, part of the reason we haven't sort of looked back at our post-World War II role in the world and suggested maybe it's time to try something different is because over that time, over those many decades, institutions have been built up that are committed to a kind of America as world leader role, and an entire class of bureaucrats and politicians have been socialized to not question this role for the United States. So the United States does have a very unique role, and the inflection point, you know, does have a lot to do with the end of World War II. That made us keep our troops in Europe to prevent the rise of any other revisionist power that might threaten the stability there. Same thing in East Asia. But, you know, conditions started to change pretty quickly after that, and yet we continued to expand. So once the Soviet Union collapsed and the Cold War ended, the reason behind our NATO military presence in Europe disappeared, essentially, and we responded to that by expanding NATO. We now have about 800 military bases in about 70 or 80 countries around the world. We have some measure, some kind of special forces or what have you, in maybe 150 countries around the world. We're extremely hyperactivist with our military. More than 40% of Americans have lived the majority of their lives with the United States in a state of war. And so this is the kind of foreign policy that we have. We seem stuck with it. And even when we get presidents and leaders in Washington that see that we ought to take a massive turn away from this kind of addiction to U.S. military intervention, particularly in the Middle East, they seem powerless even to actually turn the ship of state in a new direction.
Again, we're talking with John Glazer, Director of Foreign Policy Studies at the Cato Institute. John, you know, one thing, and we've brought this up on the show many times, one of the things that I think has made it so complicated and sticky and I don't know what else is that we don't follow the Constitution's mandate that Congress declare war. So we go into Korea in an undeclared war, correct? And that thing is still technically going on. It's a ceasefire. We go into Afghanistan in an undeclared war, and that thing is still going on. And we can name, you know, several other skirmishes that we've done. When we were in Iraq, that was an undeclared war. And by and large, because we don't declare the war and we don't have the full country behind it, you might say, and of course, Vietnam is probably the worst and most perfect example of an undeclared war. So why don't we get back to following the Constitution? I mean, this thing about the War Powers Authorization Act. Talk about throwing responsibility away. I just wanted to get your thought on that whole thing.
Yeah, so along with this global role for the United States, that has tended to expand the powers of the executive, who has all kinds of discretion in the making of foreign policy, and it's led Congress to abdicate its responsibilities with regard to determining this nation's involvement in hostilities abroad. That is their constitutional responsibility, not the executive's. And the framers thought that this was one of the most important provisions in the Constitution, because if you give the executive all the power to begin and end wars, that's a recipe for the exercise of arbitrary power and possibly even tyranny. And that's the kind of thing that we face. And if we are not careful about the way our institutions are set up, we have this incredible hubris now where we view the world's problems as our own, and if the president deems it necessary to intervene, he usually does so militarily, because we kind of see that as our primary tool in foreign policy, and we get entangled. And that's why, you know, you mentioned executive war powers. It's become a major problem in the post 9/11 era. The 2001 AUMF, or Authorization for the Use of Military Force, granted the executive branch from Congress the power to attack the perpetrators of 9/11 and anyone who aided or harbored them. Later on, the term associated forces cropped up, but that's actually not in the text of the legislation. And members of Congress and the executive branch in unison have used this authorization to justify not only going after al-Qaeda and those who aided and harbored them, but groups that were enemies of al-Qaeda, groups that didn't even exist at the time of 9/11, groups that had nothing to do with 9/11, and it doesn't have geographical boundaries either. So we've used this authority in Iraq and Syria and Afghanistan and Pakistan and Somalia and Libya and Niger, and so there's basically no reins whatsoever on the president's ability to wage war, and that's a very dangerous thing for a democracy.
Getting back to Syria, John, even the Democrats, you can't even rely on them to want to pull troops out, because they're jumping on Donald Trump and saying, you know, the thing about the Kurdish situation and abandoning the Kurds and then all these other different things, as in they can be, in some cases, more hawkish than he can. So you don't even know who's on what side anymore. It's getting very, very hard to figure it out.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, unfortunately, it becomes politically beneficial for Democrats to adopt a more hawkish disposition on those areas in which Donald Trump has voiced a kind of dovish position. So if you want to be really tough towards Russia and sort of reaffirm and reinforce our military alliances in Europe, well, that's a good opportunity for you if you're a Democrat, because it makes Donald Trump look out of touch. Same thing with North Korea. I worry about Democrats coming along and saying, well, we've got to get tougher, we've got to impose harsher sanctions, we've got to drop this diplomacy until they make confidence-building measures on their side. And I don't think the more hawkish approach works, and that kind of just demonstrates the tactical nature of our politics rather than it being based on principle.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even know who one can look at and say with any confidence anymore, you know, this is the kind of a person that will have a consistent foreign policy. It just doesn't seem to, you know, to. I mean, we look at Rand Paul, who is about as libertarian as there is right now, although he's a Republican. And, you know, he's unequivocal. I have to give him credit. He will say we shouldn't be there. You know, this is not our job. We're not the world's policemen. And it sounds like he's about the only guy that you can rely on.
Well, yeah, they're few and far between here in Washington, and that yeah, goes to the thing I said earlier, which is that, you know, most of the professional policy people in this town have been socialized around a foreign policy of American engagement and leadership, kind of the indispensable nation version of what the United States ought to do in the world. And it's hard to get them out of that habit. I do think, however, that it is now widely acknowledged that coming out in favor of more military interventions or more wars or even being reluctant to talk about our over-involvement in the world is politically costly. And I think that's because Americans see now that, particularly in the excesses of the post-9/11 years, we've gone way too far overboard, and we need to rein it back in. And they don't want more wars. They don't want to send their children off to fight for a war that isn't about defending this nation from serious attack. And so it's become politically beneficial to demonstrate your dovish qualities. The problem is it doesn't always make it into policy. It just makes it into politics.
Right. Well, John, thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate your talking about this. Very interesting indeed. And look forward to having you back.
Thanks so much.
All right, sir. John Glazer of the great Cato Institute. All right, let us take our break. When we come back, we're going to be talking with the proprietor of the Barber Poll about all things impeachment and Jeffrey Epstein.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
The best barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop, located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They've got a beautiful new facility, but you'll still get the very best haircut from the very best hair cutters, and for a great price, too. Andrew's Master Barbershop is open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2 p.m. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza, State Road 580 and Overcash Drive in Dunedin.
Don't miss the Craft Beer Hour every Wednesday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. We'll bring you up to speed on craft beer events and festivals, local breweries, and interview the brains behind the brews. So grab a pint and listen to the Craft Beer Hour every Wednesday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network, and visit the website, thecraftbeerhour.com.
Are you a writer, inventor? Do you have questions about your intellectual property rights? Well, tune in every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 11 o'clock for Joy on Paper. Once a month, I will have a special guest, the writer's legal eagle, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson, who can answer your questions. Protect your valuable work. Email me your questions to patsy.radio@gmail.com and then listen in every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. right here on Tampa Bay's Tan Talk Radio Network. That's patsy.radio@gmail.com.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
We are back on a very spooky eve of Halloween, Wednesday. Tomorrow, we're all going to get dressed up like ghosts and goblins and go wandering around down the street. I don't know what and why, but that's what you do on Halloween. And speaking of Halloween, we've got the master and proprietor of the Barber Poll, Andrew Ceraci, the master barber. And Andrew, there's so much going on all the time. We could start out with impeachment talk, you know, but after a while, that even gets a little tiring. What about, let's talk about Jeffrey Epstein. I mean, I thought...
Paul, what did I say from the beginning?
You did.
And, you know,
yes, you did.
The guy was right on there this morning. I got it. Tape, I put it all over Facebook. I said, look at this.
You did?
He's coming out telling you this guy was killed. He was murdered. But you know what? That's all we'll hear about it, Paul.
Yeah. Now, can we tie this in any way to politics? Jeffrey Epstein?
Of course.
Okay.
You got Bill Clinton on the happy plane there. And who else? Even Schumer was on the happy plane. They got
happy
pictures
plane?
Of all of them. Yeah, the happy plane. That's what I called it.
Yeah, the plane dropped in on Epstein in the Bahamas. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. And the guy knew too much. He knew too much. But you know what? Let's have an investigation against it. Come on.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, these guards were paid off. The cameras were shut off. Give me a freaking break, man. Yeah. Are the American people that stupid? Yes, they are. Go ahead.
I know. I'm beginning to think you're right. They're just, if it walks and talks and quacks like a conspiracy, it is a conspiracy. Yes, I do.
Of course, Paul. Yeah. Just like this Adam Schiff. Now, give me a freaking break with his impeachment baloney. Enough of this crap.
Well, exactly. And I love the segue, by the way. House Democrats yesterday introduced a resolution to formalize. I don't know what they mean by formalizing their impeachment inquiry. What the hell does that mean?
They don't know either. All they're doing, Paul, is trying to waste time. Okay? It's like I told you the other day. The Senate cannot campaign.
You're right.
Okay, remember I talked to you the other day? I researched it. The Senate cannot campaign as long as there's an impeachment investigation going on.
Yeah.
They let this go on, and you know what? They think they might take over the Senate. You understand? They're playing politics here. It's got to come to an end, Paul. But you know what? I think it's coming to an end, because what's going to happen now, you got Barr and Durham out there, and they're getting ready to put the hammer down. You see, Brennan, I don't know if you've seen it or not yet on the computer. Remember I told you last week that Brennan sat there and said that he was doing nothing but listening to Obama's rules, what he wanted him done.
Yeah, we're talking about the security officials in the Obama administration, and of course, you're talking about John Durham.
That's right.
And Attorney General Barr. Durham, by the way, is a straight arrow, even in the eyes of Democrats. And he's been launching this this look into the hanky-panky of the 2016 election around Donald Trump's surveillance. And I'm still waiting for them. I mean, you and I have spoken, I don't know how long, about waiting and waiting and waiting for these reports to come out. And
that's
sometimes
right.
I wonder if they get a little wobbly, these guys, you know, and
well,
they go, well,
you know,
let's hold
on. I think that Trump is making them dotting their I's and crossing their T's, my friend, because when this goes down, he wants it in place perfect. I mean, you were just talking about Syria, right? Look at what he did in Syria. This is how smart this guy was, okay? He wanted to get their leaders. He wanted to pull. He pulled our troops back 20 miles. He didn't pull our troops out. He pulled them back 20 miles, okay,
from
the border.
Yeah, go ahead. It's beginning to look like
he made a strategic move, Paul. Not only did he pull our troops back 20 miles, he got Russia and Turkey guarding their borders now instead of us doing it, putting our guys in danger. And by saying he was withdrawing the troops, he had the moles coming out of the holes waiting to get shot, buddy.
Yeah, well, of course, they got our buddy Al Baghdadi, who's, by the way, not my daddy. And
then they said, but you know his successor. What happened the next day? He got him,
too. They got him, too, yeah.
Okay. So now the Democrats, they can say whatever they want. Well, he didn't tell us. You know, he was a baloney. This was a top secret mission like Obama. We got 50 of our special forces coming at this longitude, latitude. They're going to be there at 6 o'clock. They were waiting for him.
Could you imagine informing Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff? Hey,
that's exactly what they, you know what would have,
don't
you know
tell
what
anybody. Don't tell anybody, but we're going to go.
Well,
yeah, go ahead.
Let me tell you what they would have done. They would have put our troops in harm's danger to make Trump look bad. They would have set it up that they were coming. These guys would have got blown away, and they would have said, look at what Trump did. Look what he did to our people. The best thing he done was not tell them anything. They've got more leaks than the average pool does around here.
You know, Adam Schiff can't help himself. By the way, speaking of the great Adam Schiff, I notice that he is stifling questions in his committee.
Oh, yeah.
He's stifling questions from the Republicans on the committee. He will actually stop and say, you're out of order. You can't ask that question.
That's right.
Can you believe that he's getting away with that?
Well, I don't know how he's getting away with anything here. Where are all these laws coming from? You know, if that was me or you on a trial, come on. Where's the attorneys? This is a bunch of bull crap, and we know it. Again, are the people going to put up with this, and how long are we going to put up with
this?
This is our government. Look at the millions of dollars they're wasting. You want to talk about helping the poor people around here? $40 million for Mueller's investigation alone with nothing.
Yeah.
I heard that Nancy Pelosi trusts money out of Social Security. I don't know if this is true or not. They go through their impeachment fund.
I don't know if they do that or not. You know what? It's one big pot, and you know, they can just borrow more money. It's so stupid. But I want to read a story to you, Master Barber Andrew. A new study has found majority of coverage in the media is based mostly on anonymous sources. The Media Research Center revealed yesterday that in the month after Pelosi formally announced the impeachment inquiry, 322 minutes of airtime was tallied between ABC, CBS, and NBC News with 140 individual news segments. And among those segments, roughly, I know it's hard to follow, but roughly 57% relied, at least in part, on info from anonymous sources. People that won't come out and say who they are, like our friend the whistleblower, who now doesn't want to even come out whatsoever and testify.
Yes, because there is no whistleblower, Paul. This was a setup by Schiff. They all went along with it. Pelosi was hesitant. Now she's involved with it. And let me tell you something. They all ought to go to prison for this, Paul.
Do you think they will?
I think it's coming down.
Do you?
I think, Paul, this is a coup against the President of the United States. It's a bunch of baloney.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the people have got to see this. They've got to see what's going on. You know, look at Washington the other night with the baseball game, what they did to Trump. Those people are so vile and disgusting. It's unbelievable. They're not American. They're trash.
Yeah, it's very, of course, you know, even George W. Bush showed up at the park one time and got booed. And, I mean, that guy, nobody could say he was, I mean, he was always a nice guy to just about everybody. So, you know what? Let's face it. Washington's a liberal town. If you're a Republican president, they'd boo Reagan.
Well, I tell you what, I'm not a big baseball fan, but I hope Houston beats the crap out of him tonight just so I can laugh at him, disgusting, vile people.
Well, stick around because Big Ed and I are going to talk about who's going to win the seventh game tonight. Hey, speaking about sports, maybe I can, let me ask you this, Andrew. Did you see your favorite newspaper, the Tampa Bay Times headline today? NCAA.
Yep.
It's payday for athletes. Do you have any thoughts about whether or not these kids in college who are good basketball or football?
Well, you know, Paul, let's face it. The colleges are making billions of dollars off of the sports.
They are?
These kids, of course. Look at these football games.
Yeah.
Okay, billions and billions of dollars while these kids are getting hurt. You know what I said? What are they giving them? $100,000 education?
Well,
big deal.
They give them a scholarship. Everything's free. They get room and board.
Yeah, it's a big deal. And they get hurt. The career's over with while they made billions of dollars.
Well, they still get their 4 years of college. You know, the reason I say that is I'm a little worried about the, what do they call it? The devil's in the detail kind of thing.
Yeah.
You get, let's say, a football team or a basketball team, and a couple of the guys, like in basketball, there's a couple of stars right on the team. So now they're going to get all the sponsorships and credit and money. What do the rest of the team guys think? What are they going to think? Or is the money going to go to the team? I mean, the kid that's the best on the team is going to get money somehow, right? I mean,
it should be a pay rate. It should be a flat rate. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? They ought to have a scale. If they do so many plays, they make this, they get this.
Oh, money. They can't figure that out, Andrew. You know that.
I think
then it's got to be a flat rate pay scale. They all get the same amount.
They should treat it like a job. The starters get $500 a week. No, I'm serious. Second stringers get $300 a week. Then there's an incentive.
What about the walk-ons? What about
if they're a starter, then they get $500 a week.
Okay.
I've got a good point there. I'm backing him on that one.
At least it's something.
That's right.
What
these
about
guys
the other
get hurt, it don't matter.
Okay. What about the, I'm just playing devil's advocate now.
Okay.
What about the other teams? Where the lacrosse team
or the water polo team
or something.
When you get 80,000 people packed in to see lacrosse, then they get paid the same.
Okay.
And they get paid the same, of course.
So it's now based on attendance rather than, I mean, how are you going to do it? You're going to allow this guy, and I haven't read all the details, but apparently, let's say you're a LeBron James type in college, you're going to be able to get endorsements and Nike contracts and this and that. Why go to school? Abandon school.
But that's a different...
Well, why are they going to school anyway? They got the scholarship to play sports. That's what they want to do.
That's a different pay scale, what they're talking about. They're talking about likeness, jersey numbers, and stuff like that.
Right.
They're not talking about on-the-field pay. They're talking about... That's basically off-the-field.
Mm-hmm.
The jerseys and stuff like that that they're selling.
Okay. So you guys, both of you, feel like... it's been unfair to the colleges and the students, and therefore, not the colleges, because the colleges are making money.
Like bandits. Oh. They make out like bandits no matter what they do.
I just think trying to enforce these rules is going to become such a mess. And what about jealousy on the parts of some of these players that don't get any of this,
Well, it gives them incentive, Paul, to do better.
Okay. Do better. Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
But that's the capitalism system, isn't it? You better make more.
I guess I just like the idea. I used to think that there's something to be said for amateur status and kids playing for the college and the rah-rah.
Yeah, but if the colleges weren't making billions of dollars, Paul, that would be fine.
I guess you're right.
But go buy a college football ticket.
We're not talking about paying these kids millions of dollars. No, that's not right.
But don't you think it will blossom into that, Ed?
No. You can't let it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a very interesting topic. And gentlemen, and Andrew, as always, my friend. Now, Andrew, my final question to you. What costume are you wearing tomorrow when you're doing haircuts, please?
I'm dressing up like Bernie Sanders, man. I want to scare everybody.
Excellent. And I'm going to come in. I'm going to come in just to see that, because that would be wonderful.
You got it, buddy.
What you'll be doing? You'll be poking your scissors up in the air as you talk, too.
All right.
Thank you, my friend.
Well, you take care.
All right, buddy.
Bye-bye.
There he is, the best barber in town, Andrew the Master Barber. All right, let's take our final break. And by the way, speaking about Halloween, we're going to give you the top 10 scariest movies of all time.
Is the Tantalk Radio Network.
The best barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop, located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They've got a beautiful new facility, but you'll still get the very best haircut from the very best hair cutters, and for a great price, too. Andrew's Master Barbershop is open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2 p.m. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza, State Road 580 and Overcash Drive in Dunedin.
Hi, this is Jay Leno.
Hey, this is Ted Nugent.
Hi, everybody. This is David Hobbs.
Hi, this is Bob Varshu.
Hey, this is Danny the Count Coker.
Hey, this is comedian, author, and most importantly, vintage race car driver Adam Carolla.
Hi, this is Shirley Cha-Cha Muldowney.
I'm John Forrest.
Hey, this is Jack Roush.
And you're listening to Nostalgic Radio and Cars.
That's Nostalgic Radio and Cars with the most fascinating and legendary names in motorsports every Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, did you know there's a live psychology talk show Thursday and Friday at noon where you can call in and get free guidance and also learn several different topics relating to ending the stigma on mental health? It's called Moments of Clarity on WTAN 1340 AM. It's with licensed therapist Tiffany Warner, who will try to end the stigma on mental health. But the only way you can do that is to listen to Moments of Clarity Thursday and Friday at noon on WTAN 1340 AM, the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, Ghostbusters. Ed, you are really on top of it today. I got to give you a lot of credit. Well, before we get into our top 10 scariest movies, we're going to talk a little baseball, by the way, also with Big Ed, our sports guru, in a moment. But did you know that political leaders in Canada, representing a large chunk, in fact, most of the geographical part of Canada, are talking about breaking away from the rest of the country in the wake of Justin Trudeau's re-election as prime minister. And this time, they're not primarily in French-speaking Quebec, which has always wanted to separate itself from the rest of Canada. Instead, it's the oil-dependent provinces out west. They are talking about secession. And they're talking about it amidst a perception that Justin Trudeau and the eastern part of Canada are being run by urban liberals. It's kind of like when we talk about, you know, the major cities of our country here in the U.S., L.A., and Chicago, and New York. And so kind of, you know, it's almost the same thing. And you got all that oil out west. And believe me, the eastern part of Canada does not want to lose the western part of Canada. That's a lot of money. So this is becoming a real headache, apparently, for Justin Trudeau. And he's already trying to form a majority government because They did not, his party, the Liberals, did not get enough seats. They didn't get 50% or more of the vote. So they have to, but they got the, you know, they got the highest percentage of the vote, but not 50%. So he has to work with one of the other two parties to form a majority and get legislation passed. So this is really getting weird up there. And we're going to be keeping an eye on that because all the oil and all the money, quite frankly, is coming from the western part of Canada. Okay, let's get back to the United States. And I want to talk with Ed about Game 7 of the World Series tonight in Houston. And Ed, I don't ever remember a World Series where the visiting team won all of the games. We've played six games, and the visitors won every game. So what's going to happen tonight? Is Washington, the visitor, going to win the World Series?
These teams are allergic to home.
They are. I mean, it wasn't even close last night. It wasn't close last night. 7-2, I think.
I don't know if it's the pressure or what, but I'm going to go with the Nationals tonight.
You are?
Yeah.
Now, do you think there's a jinx because of... do you think, not really a jinx, but do you think, for instance, that the Houston team is going, you know what? You know, they're actually nervous and it's affecting their performance?
I think it's overconfidence of playing too much is put at playing at home, I think. You know, the Rays said it, the Rays players said it, that they really didn't care whether, they had one of the best road records. Right. You know, in the league, but they didn't care whether it was at home or on the road. So,
well, that's because
some
they
teams
hate
are tight.
That's because they hate their stadium, and they always felt better, and more comfortable playing somewhere where they can see the ball better.
The one thing you don't want to do is lose Game 7 at home. I mean, that's just like losing twice.
But these guys are all stars, professionals. They're used to crowds. What's going on? Is this just a coincidence? But, I mean, deep down, is it just a coincidence?
I think it is just a coincidence. But some of it, you know, there's so much hype, like I said, and it puts a lot of pressure. You know, not every guy there is an all-star. There are, you know, baseball requires some of those younger guys to come through when you need them, and guys are over-trying and, stuff like that. So
okay, my friend. I mean, it's, I don't know. I have been rooting, up until Washington fans booed President Trump the other day, I had been rooting for the Washington Nationals only because they'd never won the World Series. Mm. But I'm beginning to think I might not
have. I wanted to tell you this. I learned something every day. Remember last show on Monday, we had the top 10 best NFL stadiums?
Yeah, right.
Do you know when you hear announcers say that guy needs to run north and south, or coaches run north and south, not east and west? You know what that means?
Well, wait. They say run east and west.
No. They tell the guy, don't run east and west. That's sideline to sideline.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Run north and south.
Yeah.
You know why? Because every stadium in the league, the field is pointed north and south.
Is that right?
Yes, every stadium in the league, because the sun sets in the west for the fans.
Okay.
Would you believe? I never knew that.
I didn't know it either. I'm going to have to. Is that include baseball?
I don't know about baseball.
But football,
because
all 31 or 32 teams.
32 teams. They're all the same. They're all the fields are pointed north and south.
So in other words, the goal line, you're running either north or south.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah,
that is
never
really
knew that.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Where did you read that, by the way?
I can't remember where,
ESPN
but I
or
looked it up.
Like
no, I can't remember where, but I looked it up.
Okay.
And it is true. Every stadium is pointing north and south. If you think, look at Ray J, it's pointing north and south.
I would never quibble with you in your knowledge of stadiums, Ed, because you impressed me when we did the top 10 stadiums, because you knew something about every one of those stadiums. I was impressed, I must tell you. All right, my friend. Enough buttering you up. This is Halloween's Eve. Now, I want the proper screams.
Oh, okay.
All right, now I'm going to allow... He was going over to the drums, and now he's going somewhere else, because we want to do the top 10 scariest movies of all time. Now, this comes from liveabout.com, okay? And when we get to number one, Ed, I want you to tell me what you think is the scariest movie. But are you ready, Ed?
Just give me... 10 seconds.
Ed's still trying to put his mask on.
I'm trying to think.
You don't need a mask. You'll scare him anyway, Ed.
She's a good screamer. Come here. Okay.
All right. He's got it. All right. So here we go. These are the top 10 scariest movies of all time. Number 10. Holy Toledo. I just fell out of my chair. The Changeling. Do you remember that one, Ed? 1980. George C. Scott stars as a lonely man whose family was killed in an accident. And so he moves into an empty mansion and all kinds of crazy things.
Yeah.
Okay. Number 9. By the way, Ed, I never thought you could get that high. Number 9 is Halloween.
Which one?
The original 1978 version with Jamie Lee Curtis. John Carpenter's horror classic. She was a babysitter terrorized by a psychotic killer.
We played Michael Myers' theme there. Do-do-do-do-do-do.
You did. You're right. I tell you, Ed, you are right on it today. Number 8. Do you remember The Sixth Sense?
Yes.
I thought that was a terrific movie. And the ending was so good. Mm. I just, my jaw dropped. Okay, number 7. Oh, boy. Number 7 is Alien. Mm. You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
1979.
Sigourney Weaver.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. That's right. It was a sci-fi film. Oh, my God. And she was so good in it. Number 6. The Amityville Horror, 1979. Mm. They move into a house somewhere in the New England area. James Brolin and Margo Kidder. Yeah.
That's New York, upper state.
Yeah, upstate New York.
You said New England.
It is New England and upstate New York, my friend. Didn't you know that?
Mm-mm.
Upstate New York is part of New England. Oh, yeah. Mm. That's all right. Number 5, The Shining.
Just watched that the other day.
Did you?
Oh, yeah. You know, there's a sequel coming out.
You know, Jack Nicholson was so creepy in that movie. And this was 1980. Mm-hmm. And Shelley Duvall. There's a sequel?
It's either a sequel or a prequel.
Because they got the twins.
Yes,
that were in the, I know what you mean. All right, buddy. All right, number 4. Poltergeist.
Mm-hmm.
Poltergeist. Now, this is one of those movies that, what's his name made? He made Jaws. I can't think of his name now. The director.
John Carpenter?
No. But he made Jaws, and he made Close Encounters of the Third, Anyway, Poltergeist, 1982. It was a good one. Number 3. The Omen. Do you remember that one?
Yep.
That was a scary movie. I thought one of the best. Gregory Peck was in it, and Lee Remick. And they had Squire, the son of Satan, in that one. Wow. All right. Number 2. Now, this goes back quite a few years. Rosemary's Baby.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
What'd you think? You like it?
I wish they would have shown the baby at the end.
They do kind of show the baby. Yes, they do. There was a scene where you kind of see it. Mm-hmm. All right.
Showed the crib.
Mia Farrow was in it, by the way. And it's her son that's running around now with all of these things going on. And he wrote that book. But that was a great one. All right, Ed. All right, buddy. What do you think was the number one scariest movie of all time, please?
I'm going to say Jaws.
All right, let's... The number one scariest movie of all times was The Exorcist.
Oh, yeah.
1973, and I would agree with it. I think it was just about the scariest movie I ever saw. When she did that head spin, I thought, how do they do that in 1973? How did they do that?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, there you go. And Jaws wasn't on here.
Yeah.
That's kind of interesting. All right. Well, you have a wonderful Halloween. We will be back on Friday, the day after. Remember this, though. Freedom works.
WTAN, Clearwater.
FM 106.1.
WDCF, Dade City.
FM 102.3.
WZA.